really, really awesome. And I love the spirit that you've created a platform there of creativity and solutions.
Yeah.
Also support for all of us that are practitioners out here
totally.
Doing this
mm-hmm.
thing. So it's just it's really a great spirit in that mm-hmm. website. So I wanted to encourage everybody to check that out. Hello, this is Ken Thompson. Welcome to Journeys of Maxa podcast. I'm delighted to be here today with Dr. Michael Clark here. He's a pianist, teacher, and creator. His website, michaelclarkpiano.com, is something you should definitely check out. I've been digging through it a lot this past weekend, and it's just a phenomenal website. I'm going to give you a little bit of a sense of where he's at in his career right now. As a pianist, he's appeared in over 15 states as a soloist, clinician. He specializes in 20th and 21st century music. He recently released an album of waltzes and character pieces by Florence Price. I think 7 of those were debuts,
yes.
if not world. Okay. And that's on Navona Records back in February 2024. And just this month, January 2025, he has published Rediscover Gems for Solo Piano by Florence Price. These are all, formally not published. Never before published by Hal Leonard. I've been very busy with that. As a teacher, he is assistant professor of piano at Baylor University, a nationally certified teacher of music, developing musicians of all ages. And as a creator, he founded Piano Tricks in 2020, which I have to say has now become my favorite website. it is a phenomenal exploration of redistributions and refingerings for tricky spots in the piano literature, which I love. It's amazing. We'll get into that. And he writes and presents on practice strategies, and has given many, many workshops at MTNA, TMTA, and state conventions all over the world. He is a former TMTA and MTNA performance contest coordinator, very busy with that, and has served as president of the Forum Music Teachers Association in Houston. He has a DMA in piano performance from Rice University, MM from University of Houston, BM in piano performance from Ithaca College, and I'm going to list his primary teachers here: Robert Rue, Nancy Weems, Jennifer Hagee, and Melinda Smashy. And he studied pedagogy with Courtney Kerpel and John Weems. So, lots of things, lots and lots of things. You know, I told you this before, but I have to reemphasize. I really wanted to get you on the show, and I so appreciate you being here. You're so busy right now with all your performing and promotion of your album, as well as the works of Florence Price. So I was just worried that you would be too busy, you know. So I really appreciate you coming. And also just sharing your ideas with us at a masterclass later, as well as this morning with our Music Teachers Association in town. So, but there was a time before all this. There was a time, I'm guessing, that you did not even know what a piano was. Maybe right. You don't remember. I don't know. But I'd like to kind of go back there and talk about how you came to this place that you're at in this world. So. Taking us way back.
Yes.
When did you start piano?
Well, first, thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely.
And yeah, I grew up in a small town in southwest Missouri called Bolivar, Missouri, in the Ozarks.
Nice.
And my sister took piano lessons before me. Mm-hmm. And so I always remember us having a piano, and there was music in the house. And I would say the primary place I heard music was in our church. We went to a pretty big church with a choir mm-hmm. and organ and piano. So music was around in that sense. Mm-hmm. And I started lessons when I was 7 with the teacher at Southwest Baptist University, the small university in that town. And her name was Melinda Smashy.
Oh, great.
But she was new. Teaching there, and my sister had started with the previous teacher, mm-hmm. And that teacher was a little stricter.
Okay.
And I remember, I'm told that teacher, when I was like a little kid, would come to help pick up my sister. She said, "That boy needs to sit still if he's ever going to take piano lessons." So Melinda had a gentler approach. She was willing to take a squirrely little boy.
Very good. Well, you're doing very well with sitting now.
Yes,
obviously overcome that challenge. Now this is very interesting. So you're basically this was the teacher in the university, mm-hmm. right? Basically.
Yes.
So this is not, good for you, you know,
I
good
was
for
very
you.
Fortunate.
You're very, very fortunate.
Mm-hmm.
How do you, I mean, obviously at that age, you probably weren't aware of exactly the mechanisms, but how did that connection occur?
Well, my father taught at this university in our hometown.
Okay,
and so, you know, it's only 10,000 people in the town. So it was a small community, and my sister was with the previous teacher, so it just was a close connection.
So that's great. Okay, so that's very interesting. So so he is a professor there. Yeah. He has a connection with the other professors, and then knows to find great teachers for you. Okay, that's so amazing. Now, did your sister continue?
She took lessons through high school, so she reached a competent level, but that was about where she stopped.
Okay, wow. Well, then, okay, so how long were you with your first teacher?
Yeah, from second grade to 12th grade, so all the way through high school.
This is like such a heartwarming story. Not only do I love it, I have to say that you put your first teacher in your bio, which a lot of people don't do, and I kind of find that as a person who teaches pre-college to be a little bit hurtful sometimes, but I love that you do that, and you were with her the whole time. What an experience. So do you remember, did she shift her style as you, I mean, that's a big change, right, from that, you're that age to, whatever, 18, 17, 18.
Yeah, so. I remember there were a few junctures along the way. I have some, the things that stick out are the pieces that I rebelled against. I remember, like, I really could not play that Bach minuet in G, bum, ba da da da. I think it's because I wouldn't practice it, perhaps. But
it's strange, but that does happen.
The middle section, I just could not get. Totally. I wrote on the book in pencil that I didn't like it. I mean, in pen, I wrote on it that I didn't like it. Anyway, but we got through that somehow. She told me this after the fact, that it was about in middle school. At that time, I didn't take lessons over the summer. We took a break. Yeah. And so I remember I had gotten into musicals, like Broadway musicals, and my parents had a sheet music for The King and I. Uh-huh. And I really liked the overture. And so over that summer, I just was like trying to learn to play that overture. Mm-hmm. And she said, when I came back to lessons that summer, my reading level had grown so much. And she said, wow, that really allowed us to go to a deeper place with repertoire, because just my own interest in trying to figure out this piece had taken me to a higher level.
How cool. So then that's really responsive of your parents then to have identified that, he loves this. Let's get him something. Or maybe you asked for the music.
I think it was an old copy that my parents had, actually. I mean, they would have gotten it for me if I'd asked, but they had it.
So. Okay. And so then, that was like, in a way, I think that's really important for students to find like their dream, a dream in a sense. That was a dream. You wanted that. You had motivation.
Definitely.
And then you you had to use your own resources, over that summer. And of course, your skills got honed. Mm-hmm. Isn't that interesting? Because then from that point, she says, now his reading skills have increased, I can give him more. And I'm guessing that as she gave you the more complicated repertoire, it maybe resonated with you
a
little different.
Yeah, I remember playing Chopin's Raindrop Prelude, and I remember asking her, there was a part, I was like, can I go a little faster here, and then a little slower here? And she was like, yes, of course.
You kind of discovered rubato.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, wow, I'm kind of feeling this music. So that started to change my relationship to it. Mm-hmm. And around that time also, I was playing Debussy's first arabesque.
Okay,
so I developed a real interest in Chopin and Debussy, and my parents bought me CDs. I had this Vladimir Ashkenazi, My Favorite Chopin Works CD.
Love it.
So I got all into that and this Debussy CD of Peter Frankel. And so, back in those days, we couldn't just stream anything anytime. So I would just wore out those CDs, I really loved those pieces. Mm-hmm.
So then, of course, your ear probably got really highly developed with that. And then you had like a vision of what you wanted to achieve.
Yeah.
So would you say you became, quote unquote, serious at that point?
Serious, at least. Uh-huh. And that was like 7th, 8th grade. And then getting into high school is when I became much more serious, I'd say. And I remember looking, I was kind of precocious. I was thinking about college already,
Sure.
And I was like,
at 14?
Freshman year, I was like,
That's
looking
a good idea.
Well, and also, being from a small Midwestern town, I had like ideas about leaving. I liked it. I just meant when I'm going to leave this town, where
course,
will I go?
Of course,
I remember looking at schools, and I was always, I was checking out different majors, but I was like, do they have a music minor? I always was like, but what about the music minor? Can I still do music? Mm-hmm. And then it finally occurred to me, maybe the thing I want to do is music. That seems to be the thing that I can't they have to have that, right?
Right.
And
right.
So I think it was actually in my freshman year of high school, mm-hmm. that's when I said, okay, maybe I will major in music.
Now, when you were thinking of these other things with minoring in music, mm-hmm. what were these other majors? Just curious.
Yeah, I think I was interested in journalism at the time,
okay.
which, mm-hmm. You know, I think would be a pretty stressful career.
Right.
So I'm relieved with the path I chose.
Okay, so in an alternate universe, you're a journalist
yeah.
who
yeah.
also plays piano.
I guess so.
Okay, mm-hmm. okay, that's good to know. And so journalism was one of those considerations. Now, so your teacher obviously did a really good job of staying connected with you and kind of leading you mm-hmm. through many, many changes. At what point did you tell her and your parents that, like, hey, I think I want to do this music thing? Was that a conversation or?
Fortunately, I always had their support. I think mm-hmm. I indicated in freshman year of high school that's what I thought I wanted to mm-hmm. do, and they said sure. You know, they never were discouraging me along mm-hmm. that path, mm-hmm. and they knew they could also see that I was putting in more work as well.
I remember
there was a conversation.
Yeah.
You know, like when my lesson length increased, mm-hmm. you know, it was 30 minutes for a very long time,
yeah.
and then when I increased it to 45, they said,
yeah.
well, you need to practice at least 45 minutes a day,
right,
and then
right.
an hour.
Yeah,
and so. That summer after my freshman year mm-hmm. was the first time I went to a summer piano camp, which
okay.
was a really transformational experience
I'm
for
sure.
me. So it was the University of Central Missouri piano camp in Warrensburg, Missouri.
Oh, in Warrensburg.
Yes, yep.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so uh-huh. that was a big deal for me because mm-hmm. I had not really ever been around other young people who were interested
right.
in piano. Basically,
okay.
in my hometown, I only knew me who was doing
right.
piano at my
right.
age.
Yes, yes.
And so I was exposed to a lot of interesting mm-hmm. repertoire mm-hmm. and was challenged also. I remember specifically on Mia Hines' door, she mm-hmm. had an interview with Nellie DeTrue, her mm-hmm. teacher, mm-hmm. and it said something there about how many hours you should practice per day, and I think 3 was thrown out as a minimum or something.
Right.
And I thought, I'm not doing that. 3 hours a day. And I remember thinking, I was like, I need to figure out how I'm going to do that. I'm going to have
yeah.
to like schedule that. And so
right.
I made a commitment
right. Right.
then starting my sophomore mm-hmm. year to do that, to mm-hmm. practice 3 hours
mm-hmm.
a day.
Mm-hmm.
And so that really obviously transformed mm-hmm. my relationship with
amazing,
them.
Amazing. Yeah. You know, those summer festivals that are really, that are good, like
mm-hmm.
that one, I mean, that's an amazing one. Dr. Wesley True, of course,
mm-hmm.
Nalita's
yes.
brother was, I'm sure, a part of the camp.
Well, I think he had retired by that
point. He retired
by
that point.
Okay. 2007 or 2008.
Okay, but the,
yeah.
there's an amazing legacy
yeah.
in Warrensburg,
mm-hmm.
So that's really really cool. But those experiences can be completely transformational.
Definitely.
I mean,
mm-hmm.
I'll share a little bit on my own too. I went to a camp that was near Atlanta, but anyway, it was Nalita True was there for 5 weeks, which
wow.
was quite unusual.
Yeah.
But anyway, it was like that too. It was like, wow, these people, they're like me. They love music so much, and I was sort of the only one in my universe,
mm-hmm.
you know, that I really knew well.
Yeah.
So that's amazing. So you probably came back from that just like on fire. And it's interesting, you know, some people will switch teachers, you
mm-hmm.
know. That's why I'm saying with this teacher
yeah.
that you had that she
mm-hmm.
was able to be like, okay, let's
yeah.
now do this. Do you remember I mean, she must have been delighted, I'm guessing,
mm-hmm.
when you came back just like excited.
Yeah.
Do you remember what that was like that year?
Well, you know, she always was meeting me where I was at, you know,
mm-hmm.
and she was always ready to give me more. And
mm-hmm.
I remember I came back like knowing about different composers, and it was like
mm-hmm.
I'd heard a piece by Ravel, and she was like, oh, of course. Well, that was the Sonatine. And then she like would explain, she would provide
yes.
all this context that
yes.
I didn't think to ask
right.
before,
right.
you know?
Right, right. Mm-hmm.
So that was very valuable.
Mm-hmm.
And also I began to tap into some of her specialty areas
mm-hmm.
a little more too, because
mm-hmm.
I remember she does a lot of contemporary music
mm-hmm.
and I at that time was not into that. I remember
mm-hmm.
there was this Cacciatorian Toccata,
mm-hmm.
not the big one, but there's like a littler one
okay.
in a Masterpieces with Flair
mm-hmm.
collection.
Right.
And I remember hating it. I just thought it was the ugliest thing. It's like nanny 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 and
right.
I thought it was the ugliest thing. And I don't know if I ever finished it. But anyway,
uh-huh.
that was my relationship to contemporary
yeah.
music at that time.
Uh-huh.
Contemporary, but,
yes.
you know, 20th century
I
music.
Hear you. I hear you. Right, yeah.
So, but at the Warrensburg camp,
mm-hmm.
One of the faculty, or I think it was a student
mm-hmm.
counselor, played the first movement of Carl Vine's piano sonata.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, what
okay.
is this?
Yes.
You know, I was,
yes,
so
of course.
That was really
yeah.
cool. So then
yeah.
my teacher helped me
mm-hmm.
find his 5 bagatelles. So
oh.
then I worked on those because that was more appropriate
yes,
for me
course,
at that time.
Yes.
So that was a big mm-hmm. change for me.
Mm-hmm. It's so important to have that, and you did. And obviously, I think I can sort of hear in your talking and having read your website and very thoroughly, a lot of that is imbued in your own teaching mm-hmm. now. A lot of that meeting people where mm-hmm. they are, and then helping them forward, and getting them excited about music and all that. That's amazing. Okay, so fascinating. I'm kind of skipping a bunch mm-hmm. of things. So there as you go through high school,
yes.
right? You're working. You're eventually going to be deciding where to go for
yeah.
college,
mm-hmm.
and you went to, I think, Ithaca for your
yes.
BM. How was that like decided on? How did you pick mm-hmm. your teacher for
absolutely.
Ithaca?
Yeah. So Ithaca also had a summer piano camp,
okay.
so I went to that the next two
yes.
years, and,
gotcha.
And I know it, and yes. so I developed a relationship with Jennifer Hagee
oh,
at that
fantastic.
Camp,
okay.
and it was a similar mm-hmm. experience where I went, and the level at that camp was even higher, and I mm-hmm. so then I started to become aware, that I'm one fish in a very big pond,
right.
And so that was, it wasn't discouraging,
yeah.
it was kind of inspiring,
of
I
course,
think.
Of course,
and
right.
mm-hmm. I, was impressed by her as a mm-hmm. performer.
Absolutely.
Man, she gave the most incredible recital with
yeah.
Liszt's Sixth Hungarian Rhapsody,
oh,
and
wow.
I had never seen anything like that.
Really?
Because
yeah.
in a small town, we'd occasionally have artists uh-huh. come in, but I had seen a dearth of, mm-hmm. top-level artists, mm-hmm. so I was like, blown away.
Yeah, you're blown. Well, I'll share you a little bit of a crazy story. Mm-hmm. That camp that I mentioned that I was mm-hmm. talking about that was so inspirational with Nelita True, Jennifer was a fellow camper
oh, amazing.
With me, but she was younger than the rest of us and this little prodigy doing amazing things and very sweet, and I hope she liked us because
yeah.
we certainly loved her. But it's been amazing to watch her career mm-hmm. Just explode, and she's also just such a dear human
yes,
being.
Definitely.
So
mm-hmm.
okay, so you went to the camp. So that's another good thing for people to know.
Yeah.
And I think that I found that for myself as well. When you go to a camp, festival, whatever you want to mm-hmm. call it, and work with artists and are excited, you get such a great sense of the teacher.
Mm-hmm. It was a really yeah. great yeah. experience mm-hmm. and wonderful facilities for music mm-hmm. and the whole faculty there was great. And we got to interact with multiple mm-hmm. of them through different classes. So
yeah.
I really knew that I definitely was going to audition there.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I auditioned at several schools,
yeah.
some in Missouri and
mm-hmm.
some outside.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a great scholarship at Ithaca. And so that made it very
made
possible
it easier.
For me to go.
Yeah. yeah. Do you, and was there, but my guess is that you were excited to just be there because you were excited to work with, Jennifer
yes.
Hagee
mm-hmm.
and all those people. And again, we're having to fast forward so much, but then you got done,
mm-hmm.
right? And then you went to your master's degree.
Yes.
And so how did you choose where to go for your master's mm-hmm. and who to study with?
Well, I certainly asked Dr. Hagee for some of her suggestions mm-hmm. of schools
right.
and teachers, and someone she mentioned was Nancy Weems.
Mm-hmm.
And I was becoming involved in our student chapter of MTNA
mm-hmm.
at that time, and we as a chapter attended the conference in Anaheim, the
oh, okay.
MTNA National Conference in Anaheim. Mm-hmm. I think that was maybe 2012
mm-hmm.
or around then.
Mm-hmm.
And John and Nancy Weems were giving a joint masterclass
yes.
at that conference.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the first time I saw her teach.
Yeah.
And she was so inspiring and creative as a
mm-hmm.
teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And full of insights. And
mm-hmm.
I got a chance to meet her then,
mm-hmm.
and I knew I wanted to go and have a lesson.
Mm-hmm.
So that summer, when I was back in Missouri, my dad drove with me down
mm-hmm.
to Houston
mm-hmm.
For a lesson, and it was incredible.
Yeah.
And I knew that she was somebody that I really would
mm-hmm.
be interested in studying
mm-hmm.
with. So
mm-hmm.
then when I auditioned at a few places and had some offers, she really came after me, too. She called
uh-huh.
Jennifer, and she
yeah.
said, how can I get Michael to come
oh,
to Houston?
Great.
And
yes.
so I knew that
yes.
she was interested in me being there
right,
too. So
right,
I felt
right.
that
uh-huh.
that connection.
So that you've had, this is such an interesting, so you started with a really solid teacher,
mm-hmm.
really, and then you went to another phenomenal pianist teacher, and then Nancy Weems, another phenomenal pianist and teacher. And what I also like is a very nice person as
yes,
well.
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And tell me about then, again, I'm having to skip because you've done so many things. So now DMA time.
Mm-hmm.
So what was your decision process
yeah.
with that?
So I felt like master's was so short. It was just
mm-hmm.
2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I decided to not immediately go into DMA
okay.
because I almost felt like the second year of master's was going to be entirely devoted to the DMA audition.
Well, that's true.
And
yeah.
so
right.
at that point, I thought,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to delay this.
Mm-hmm.
And so I decided to stay in Houston. I was
mm-hmm.
teaching privately.
Mm-hmm.
I taught adjunct at Lone Star College.
Okay.
And I taught in an after-school program. And I still came to Mrs. Weems' studio class.
Oh, how nice.
So,
yeah.
so I felt still connected
yeah.
to that community.
Yeah.
And at that point, I decided Houston is a great place for the
mm-hmm.
arts, a great
mm-hmm.
place for
mm-hmm.
learning to be a good piano
mm-hmm.
teacher. So I thought, I'd like to stay in Houston. So I applied to University of Houston for my DMA. And then really as a lark, it was Thanksgiving Day. I was like, I'll just apply to Rice also, which is also in Houston.
Right.
And I had not gotten into Rice as a master's student. And so I just thought, well, I'll just try again.
Just give it a shot. Yeah.
And this time I passed the pre-screening and I was given an audition and I had a lesson with Robert Rue and it was another wonderful experience. And all my teachers have been fantastic. He's a little firmer.
You're communicating and being very, very diplomatic.
So, yes. And
firmer.
But I could benefit from
but
that.
But probably at that time in your career too.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so after my lesson with him, I thought, I can grow a lot with him. Mm-hmm. So I really, you know, I was already practicing hard for the audition, but I thought I want to give it my all.
Right.
And then I got in. And so that was, 2017 then that I started my DMA in the fall. And the Shepherd School of Music at Rice University is a wonderful place to be. I've enjoyed all my school experiences, but the Shepherd School, thanks to the generosity of Houston donors, everybody who goes is fully funded at the DMA level.
I didn't realize that.
I got a stipend and I had a teaching assistantship. So they really made it possible for me to focus on my studies.
Yeah, that's amazing. Wow. That's really, really incredible. So, again, a great experience with another great teacher, and I wanted to touch a little bit on your pedagogy background, just because those are two of my favorite teachers, are Courtney Kerpel and John Weems.
Yes.
John is what inspired me to do what I do as a teacher, and I think countless others. Mm-hmm. And then Courtney is a dear friend as well, as I have tremendous respect for him as well. So did you study pedagogy?
Yeah, so I did a master's in performance and pedagogy.
That was
another thing that attracted me to the University of Houston was the opportunity to do that. Mm-hmm. And I learned a ton from Courtney, especially about how to think about teaching and how to plan, how to understand learning, how students learn. And that was in my master's degree. Mm-hmm. And then in that year off, I took some private lessons with John Weems on how he teaches beginners.
Yes.
So that was very influential from a technical and musical perspective training of beginners.
Wow, okay. We caught up a little bit close to where we are now. So let's talk about a little bit about what you're doing currently and what you have coming up. You've got some performances in Bogota, Colombia, and in Turkey.
Yeah.
And you obviously dove hard into Florence Price's works very clearly. And this has all been very recent.
Yes.
So, and including just the timing of finishing your DMA, starting Piano Tricks in 2020. And I almost don't even know what to talk about first. But maybe let's talk about Florence Price.
Okay. Again. Yes. Well, I first heard her name. In a Piano Magazine article from 2018. She was at the cover story, I believe. And I just remember thinking, I don't know who this is.
Right.
But I didn't hear her music at that time. So then it was the MTNA conference in Spokane in 2019 where someone gave a session. It was Linda Holzer from Arkansas. She gave a session and played the pieces. And then I thought, I took another listen, you know, struck by the beauty of the music.
Yes.
And I was struck by how... had I not heard of this person in all of my studies.
Right.
I went to wonderful schools.
Yes.
I had great teachers.
Right, absolutely.
But they didn't know about her either. You know, and so I immediately felt a sense of kind of urgency. Like, well, how do I get a hold of this music?
Yes.
And so at that time, a few pieces were available. Mm-hmm. So I did get a hold of some. I was finishing my DMA, so I kind of had my repertoire planned for different recitals. Mm-hmm. But then it was right at the beginning of COVID, I had acquired a score. Mm-hmm. So I learned my first piece of hers, Dances in the Canebrakes, and I really enjoyed it. And from there, I had an opportunity to give a talk on her music. So the opportunity came to give a talk on a topic of my choice. So I thought, I have the time. I'd like to dig into her.
Yes.
So I thought, I've got all this music. So I prepared my very first little talk and performance of her music in 2021.
Okay.
I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
It's hard to keep track of.
Right. Of course.
And then from there, it just grew. I thought, I'll learn some more pieces.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of snowballed to where then I decided I'd like to record some of the pieces that have not yet been recorded.
Right.
And she wrote many waltzes. Mm-hmm. And I noticed that as I was flipping through the publication. Mm-hmm. So I thought, well, what if I collected these into one album?
That makes sense.
And so I did that. And that was about 30 35 minutes. So I thought she also has a lot of other romantic genre style pieces. So I thought, let me flesh out the album with that. And I got a grant from Baylor fund that album and the recording project. So that came out in 2024, about a year ago.
Yeah.
And that featured seven pieces that had never been recorded, the others maybe once or twice, so still pretty fresh.
Right, right.
And that was a wonderful experience to dig into those pieces and share them.
Yeah, amazing. And so now, and it is, I have that same feeling, which it was like a little bit of like, almost like some resentment about like, why did I not know this?
Yeah.
You know, I'm everybody's kind of feeling that, I think. But it's so, one, important to hear that, to hear it.
Yeah.
And then also, especially for people that are in the, you know, students or whatever that might be in the dreaming stage. Like, you know, you heard a lot of music as a student yourself. Well, it's nice to hear it aside from just, and even, but even getting your hands on published copies is very, very difficult. And so to add that to the, to as well is really, really important. So what was it like? I mean, I could ask about, you know, putting an album together. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people have thought about putting an album together and how you do that, but also how do you put a publication? I don't even know what to ask because it's so interesting both.
Well, so part of the process for me with doing the album was to visit the a manuscript archive at the University of Arkansas. The special collections there where Price's manuscripts are. Because there, every piece that was on the album, but for one, was published. But I knew there was another waltz that I that was not yet published, so I had to go to the archives to find it. And through that process, I was able to find even other copies of the same pieces. And I thought, oh, well, this sheds a little new light on this.
Because there were differences.
Yes, you know, very subtle differences. But and I, you know, I uncovered the occasional misprint that I thought was able to correct because I saw the manuscripts. So that was part of my process for performing.
Yeah.
And then as I was there, there were just so many pieces that had not yet been published.
Okay.
So the ones that were published were not always the easiest to get a hold of. They were published in single copies and that can get expensive for people. So my dream was, can these pieces be collected in a volume that is accessible for people? Because just as a piano teacher, I know it's a hard sell sometimes. I'm like, oh, can you buy this book? Can you buy this book? Can you buy that book? And then it adds up. And so I just, I thought more people will buy the book if it's a lot of pieces. So I reached out to Hal Leonard. Was aware of a connection there, and this was late 2023, and she passed along my information to another department, and I never heard back, but then when my album came out, she reached out to me again, that kind of worked it synergistically, and she said, did the classical department ever get back to you? And I said, no, they haven't, and she was in the educational department at Hal Leonard, and she said, well, we would be interested in doing something at a more intermediate level. And so I said, absolutely. So we worked, I worked on pitching something to them. And it was a long process of ironing out some of the copyright questions. So our understanding, I mean, the plain reading of the law is 2024, January, works that were not published in Price's lifetime entered the public domain. So Hal Leonard agrees, but it took them a bit to, they had to check, you know, the dots, the cross, however that phrase goes.
Dot the I's, cross the T's, right.
Yes. So then it wasn't until this past summer that I submitted my my Sibelius files to them, and then we got the book together, and it was just printed and published this month.
Okay, wow. So as soon as it could have been, in a sense. You know, we don't realize the amount of extra stuff there is behind something like this coming out. I mean, that's quite quite a lot of tenacity, and I'm sure there were some moments of frustration along the way, probably. But here it is out, and it's funny. Has all that challenge washed behind you now, in a sense?
You know, I knew that I was gonna do it somehow. You know, I'd even considered like, should I self-publish these works? But I just knew that if a company like Hal Leonard did it would have a farther reach.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely,
so I'm just so grateful that it ultimately did work out this way. And I'm very, you know, it felt so exciting to get the package in the mail.
Imagine.
You know,
I can't imagine.
Wow, you know. So it, even though I do often play from iPad these days, it still just feels different to have a book.
So let's talk a little bit about, again, now which this is so cool how it works so synergistically. You needed to study the manuscript, which makes sense, to do these recordings. You go there, you see all these other manuscripts. these need to be published. You reach out to Hal mm-hmm. Leonard because, hey, well, if you're going to publish something, reach mm-hmm. out to them. That's one of the huge publishers. And then because the album comes out, then it ends up mm-hmm. They have some trust of you,
yes.
and they have some awareness mm-hmm. of your extremely beautiful playing. And beautiful and virtuosic playing. So then it gets them thinking again, mm-hmm. right? And then there's a million things to iron out, but then here it is. So that's quite a journey in and of itself. So now you're promoting, I mean, you're performing and whatever and helping to share this music. So we already talked about Colombia. We talked about Turkey. Have you been there before?
No, I've never played internationally. Mm-hmm. So I'm very excited for that opportunity. Mm-hmm. So I'm giving a recital in Ankara, Turkey, at Bilkent University, where I'll play Florence Price's Piano Sonata and give a masterclass as well. And then at another university in Turkey, I'll give a Florence Price presentation.
So I'm guessing that in Ankara, have they had a lot of Florence Price performances?
I wouldn't expect.
You know, so I keep forgetting the piano tricks. I just have to talk a little bit about that. I know we've talked about so many things already. So piano tricks, for those at home, are basically other ways of approaching challenging repertoire through redistributions, refingerings, and whatnot, which we used to share those things like on copies or secretly, like, oh, here's a bunch of things. I have a ton of stuff like that, and I love that kind of stuff. I think it's so good to use your brain.
Totally.
One of the people you interviewed on that site, I'm blanking on her name right
Dorothy
now.
Dorothy Brandt.
Yeah, thank you. I read that whole article. Fantastic. I've taught a lot of Ravel, and I use the Nancy Bricard editions because they're so great with things like that. Mm-hmm. When I saw what you're doing on piano tricks, I was just so thrilled. I also like that you invite other people to share their tricks, and then you give them kind of, a shout out on the site. It's really, really awesome. And I love the spirit that you've created a platform there of creativity and solutions.
Yeah.
Also support for all of us that are practitioners out here doing this thing. So it's really a great spirit in that website. So I wanted to encourage everybody to check that out. Or anything that I didn't ask that you would like to discuss?
Well, yeah, I didn't really share that I have been at Baylor University now for 3 years.
Yes, of course.
And it's been such a privilege to be there. And by the time this podcast comes out, this will have happened. But the Baylor MTNA chapter will be premiering these 20 pieces this Tuesday. So it's been wonderful to work with those students. We're going to give this concert where they make the premieres of
that,
the pieces.
And, that's so great. I love that spirit because not only are people going to get to hear this music, but now all of those students that are performing are going to get to do a premiere.
Yeah.
That's going to be on their bios for a long time.
Hopefully
what a great spirit. I have to say, I'm so glad you said that about Baylor. I have such a love for Baylor Music Department because of the various events that they've done over my entire career. I've had, there's so many phenomenal teachers, phenomenal facilities there, and just a great spirit in that music department.
Yeah, and a great Summer Piano Institute,
absolutely.
Connecting back to,
Well, that's true, and I've had a lot of students that have gone to that Summer Institute. So y'all go to those things because that's really, really critical. And it's a great experience for the students. Thank you. Anything else that I didn't ask you?
I'm hoping to record another album this summer with Price's Piano Sonata, and then other short pieces from this book. So if all goes according to plan, that'll be out maybe a year from now.
Okay, fantastic. You're obviously not even not near the zenith of your journey at this point, but it's fascinating. So to recap, you had basically you had a really good great care with your very first teacher, and of course when that happens, they're going to make sure that you move on to another great teacher, and that just kind of kept happening for you. And I love the website. I love what you're doing with Piano Tricks and all these recordings. And thank you so much for coming to town and for speaking with us today. You're giving
a
masterclass tonight. I'm excited to see that. And thank you all for being with us. I'm so glad that you could be with us while we're talking with Dr. Michael Clark today. This is Kenneth Thompson from MAXA Musical Arts Center of San Antonio, wishing you well on your journey. Thank you.